Good evening, everyone. I'm Emilia Bercé from Women Writing Architecture, presenting the first of our The Author Speaks series, where we found out a little about the approach and inspiration of different female producers of text, focusing each time on one of their works. Our author today is Korean-American designer and researcher Mindy Su, and I'm joined by Yehi Shin, a Korean architect based in Zurich and part of Women Writing Architecture. We were wondering, Women Writing Architecture, as we started, the cyber feminist was a big discovery for us and quite a big reference. And this, I think, formed your way of gathering information or inputs on your arena. I think it was an open call to the way of structuring your website and questioning a non-linear way of reading history. And now we are in 2023, and with the time we realized that Women Writing Architecture, it's not so much about the website itself, or like the website is becoming an agent in mechanism of changes. All the activities around the website are starting to be part of mechanisms of changes. I was wondering how this developed on your site. I was even more wondering because you are doing this grand tour, almost like a rock star inhibition for a sort of agenda, which maybe you could tell a bit more about.
Yeah. Similar. I feel like first it started off as a spreadsheet. I guess before this, I've kind of had a long history of liking making lists, asking people to add to those lists, and then sharing them as resource guides. So when I was starting this project as a spreadsheet, I was compiling examples of theory and practice-oriented online artworks, movements, etc. And when I asked people what was missing, it kind of spiraled on its own. Mm-hmm. So it helped me see that maybe things that I was interested in also felt very resonant to other people. So it was actually kind of interesting that it snowballed into a larger project, because that was never really the intent. So from that spreadsheet then came the website that was commissioned by Rhizome, and that continues to be like our primary crowdsourcing and mode of display. More people will see the website than the book. And then when we decided to make the book, I worked with Laura Combs and Lily Healy to kind of create this input-output structure so we could make a snapshot of the website's contents and then flow that into InDesign as a way to create a document of this website in a moment of mutation, because the website will continue to grow and the book is, by book's nature, rather fixed. So then the tour that you mentioned, in some ways I do feel like a touring musician, but it almost feels like the fourth version or container for this project, because all of these social gatherings lead to like more material gatherings and people end up submitting entries afterwards, and it allows for like a very rich discourse around the text and always inviting in new people from that region who have complementary research themes. So it's been like a really nice activation of this project, because it was always intended to be like this very communal exercise.
Mm-hmm. I remember when Helen and Emily and then my professor Adam asked me to contribute Women Writing Architecture. At the time, I was a bit unsure that I define me as a feminist, because I was at the time in Switzerland, and when I went to Frauenstreik with a friend, I realized, oh, there are not so many women from Asia, actually. Mm-hmm. And also, this year, Parity Group get a big prize at Primera Oppenheim, and it started 2014 at school at ETH, and until 2020, still the Parity Group was discussion to included diversity also as a topic for this group. Mm-hmm. So somehow I feel am I also included in this feminism? Yeah, so it was my starting point. Mm-hmm. And I'm very wondering if you had also some similar feeling when you really start to look at it. And I don't know how you define you your identity, but maybe some of similar feeling inspire you more open up or find an alternative way to all people, all diverse group could engage together, and it's a kind of new way of thinking your project. Can you explain it, your story?
Well, I think that the feeling that you're describing is quite common because, at least in the U.S., this was essentially third wave feminism, really thinking about the intersectionality, because a lot of what was happening in first and second wave was very much focused on, like, white feminism and what this meant for women at the highest end of the status quo. So this didn't factor in a lot of the societal impacts that POC women were dealing with. So I think that this is still, of course, a primary topic that feminism overall needs to address, which is why these other movements have been emerging, like womanism, or just ways to kind of separate themselves from white feminism and its connotations. For this book, it was almost trying to be a revisionist history in two ways. The first was more broad, like how to revise internet history at large. So this is a history where we talk about the grandfathers who created the architecture and protocol, right? So that, on the one angle, was kind of dismissing the grandmothers who were part of this, but also the social applications of the stack. But to a smaller niche, it was also trying to create a revisionist history for the niche of cyberfeminism. Because even in the late 90s, there were people like Maria Fernandez, Radhika Gajala, Margaret Tan, a lot of these people in the space who were thinking, why are all the cyberfeminists around us very Western? So I think that this conversation has always been there. And a goal of this book was to show how, like, transcontinental and rhizomatic this movement really is. And it occurs in every single region that has adopted the internet, which I think is quite powerful. Regardless of where the origins are, some people say Haraway, some people say Sadie Plant, VNS Matrix, etc. But there are a lot of other strands that were blossoming just because of their sociopolitical context and how to respond to that. So, yeah, there are multiple layers there.
And this glossary or annotation, citation, I interpreted it as like much more like a translation, because I feel and language itself always limited to express how we feel, how we want to understand. So people always try to describe more personal way or like that. Do you think this old way of expression is as a translate and interpretation, how you look at it and then how it impact on this cyberfeminism? Can you explain it a bit more?
Like different modes of translation? Well, I think, as you're saying, there's different forms of language that needs to be translated. So from the most literal sense, when things are submitted in other languages, how do we effectively translate that, honestly, into English because of my bias? Beyond that, there's also the translation across medium. What are the affordances of the tool that reveal something about the same body of content from spreadsheet to website to book to performance? Like, different things are highlighted. And I also think there's a translation from text to image or vice versa. So a lot of the images on the website, if you're looking at them through a screen reader, then for those who are visually impaired, you're not actually able to get a poetic understanding of the image if you just use automated systems. So I actually hired a poet to kind of write descriptions of all the images so that when someone is browsing the website using a screen reader, they're actually able to get the same kind of affect from a visual image that might be revealed in text. So, and I'm sure there's more. Like, translation is a very fluid thing across media, across language, across all others.
The translation from the digital to the physical to the book, so it's touching a wider readership, no? So people that goes more to bookshop and maybe less on looking thing on things on the internet. And I was wondering, because we started also as Women Writing Architecture, we start not to be a small production platform. We are starting a small publishing house with all the content we collected. So it was also your reflex, no, to fix things in time, no, with this book. So there is a real satisfaction of starting to be completely autonomous. A website first is like with really little means, you can create quite a big impact. You don't need the investors to help you to kind of set up a small business in a way. I was wondering, because of the book, but because I saw also all these physical items that you start to have, and as like small derivated products from your research, what's the future of that? Or like, did you think already further? Or how does this evolve?
So I think part of the draw is because it's almost more selfish. Like, I've been doing so much web-based work in my career. Mm-hmm. And I've also done a lot of print work. So now I'm thinking, well, there are so many modes of expression and output that are not limited to these media, even if that's what I'm the most comfortable with. So thinking about other forms of exhibition, installation, other ways to kind of manifest and represent the idea as an object seems like a new territory that I haven't explored yet. So even this ring, I made a QR code ring off Etsy because you can like order a signet ring and then give them your like family heirloom or like some symbol of your school and they'll etch it in there. Mm-hmm. But instead of doing that, I gave them the QR code for the website. And it was just a test. First, to see if it would scan. Second, to think about wearable tech. Third, to think about beauty and like its relation to technology. Like, these are just like almost like prototypes or sketches for myself. And then it's always funny then, mm-hmm, when people see this and they're like, we want one of those. I'm like, sizing rings is so hard. Like, I can give you the file and you can print it yourself. Yeah, thinking about these translations are really fascinating. I mean, even with like the augmented reality app that we created for the book reading, this was because I'm like, well, I'm so sick of Keynote and like slides. What are ways to keep the book the center of attention and as an interface and then still show how live it is? So then I worked with Tommy Martinez and we were able to create this app that overlays these moving images on top of the printed static images. So it just feels like almost like a natural progression. Mm-hmm. Generally, these days, I'm trying to trust emergence and not try to predetermine everything. So I think that's also part of the play.
The last question, maybe you did a personal collection for the website, and it's interesting because you see there are a few books resonating everywhere in the world, always the same. But I would be curious, do you want to comment one of them, why they were important to you? I can give you one if you want.
Oh, yeah.
We have been doing a podcast around Testo Junkie. Uh-huh. And this was quite an eye-opener, let's say, at least for me, to understand that gender is actually a totally artificial construction, mm-hmm, social construction. And to start thinking things out of the binary system.
Yeah. So I liked this book, Testo Junkie, by Paul Preciado, because it's representative of this idea of our bodies as technologies and how, mm-hmm, they're, as you're saying, almost embodiments of a lot of social constructs that we have to re-examine and explore and in many ways change. Within the Cyber Feminism Index book, there's a lot of examples of how like body modification or hormone hacking has been a part of this ethos of hacker culture. So for example, like Mary Magic's open source estrogen or like Cloud Kinky's Gynepunk, these are all different modes of how we can think about not only the body as a technology, but how technologies can transform human bodies. So this, I think, is like a nice feedback loop unto itself, too. It's interesting because as you're saying, gender is a societal construct. I just went to the Pippa Garner show at Kunsthalle Zurich today. And in it, she writes how gender transitioning is a very 21st century idea because we didn't have the technological or scientific tools to do this in a previous era. So what are ways that made me think, what are ways that these transitions might have been able to occur in the past without tools? And I think this kind of goes more into like consciousness and representation. So if your physical body doesn't matter, then there are no prescribed notions for how you have to kind of behave in a social construct. Maybe that kind of removes the need to adopt an appearance or et cetera that might be reflective of a certain societal conditioning. So I think this was very interesting to me in that exhibition because Pippa Garner is also very proudly like using pronouns depending on where they were in their lives. So they don't consider it dead names. They consider it like, from these years I was a he, and then from these years I was a she. And like, it feels like a tender way of reflecting on your life's history. It's a beautiful show. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, there's the Testo Junkie thing is quite, it's very, very present now, even if that was written, 10 plus years ago?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.